It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
They were overcome with emotion. Two men separated in eastern Aleppo were reunited. They were among the thousands who made it out alive. But just as the evacuation of other civilians this morning seemed to be gaining speed, it came to a halt. Syria's military says rebel fighters opened fire at civilian convoys leaving eastern Aleppo. Turkish officials and rebel commanders blame pro-government forces, in particular Iranian militias allied with Bashar al-Assad's regime. So far, about 8,000 civilians have been evacuated from eastern Aleppo, but thousands more remain trapped, according to various aid groups. Russian military officials said today that most rebel fighters have left eastern Aleppo.
We think that the withdrawal of armed groups from Aleppo and the end of the operation to liberate the city of all the necessary conditions for peace settlement of the conflict in Syria have been created.
Tonight, President Obama said that Syria, Russia, and Iran have blood on their hands for the slaughter of innocent civilians in Aleppo.
The world, as we speak, is united in horror at the savage assault by the Syrian regime and its Russian and Iranian allies on the city of Aleppo.
For those who have escaped the savage assault, their future remains uncertain.
In God willing, we will return to Aleppo. The blood of the martyrs will not go to waste. The blood of the children and those who are wounded will not go to waste. The war is not over.
While the end of the battle for Aleppo has renewed calls for peace talks, it does not mean the end of the civil war, with both rebel fighters and regime forces vowing to continue fighting. And as the fight against ISIS also continues, President Obama added tonight that the situation in Syria remains one of the hardest issues he's had to deal with in his presidency.
All right, that was John Huddy of Fox News just a few nights ago. And this is Sandy Rios with you as we celebrate Christmas. We decorate our homes. We welcome our families. We buy our gifts. We must remember that there are parts of this globe, parts of this world that are absolutely torn asunder. And our brothers and sisters in Christ, especially in the Middle East, have a very difficult next few days ahead of them. We're going to go live right now to I think it's called Karakash, Iraq. Very dangerous place, where William Murray, who's the chairman of the Religious Freedom Coalition and a good friend, is over there right now today giving aid to those in need. And he joins us, I hope, from the satellite phone. Hi, Bill. How are you?
Greetings, Sandy. And I'm in Iraq. I have actually left Karakush. There were troops from there being rushed to the front lines about 10 kilometers away, 15 kilometers away near Mosul. And we had finished our mission, and I am actually back in Ankawa, Iraq, right now.
Okay.
The situation in Karakush, by the way, is I have seen some urban warfare settings in my life. I have never seen anything like the devastation that the Islamic State rendered on Karakush. This was a Christian town about 20, 30 kilometers from Mosul. It had 75,000 people in it. The town is completely, utterly destroyed except for about 60 homes that belong to Muslims. Those are intact. Every business is intact. The gentleman that drove me out there, he owned two businesses. His businesses, all of the equipment stolen, taken to Turkey. Everything the Islamic State steals goes to Turkey and is sold. The two shops were burned out, and his home and his brother's home were absolutely leveled with no two stones on top of another. The town was liberated in October, and there's no way for anybody to go back. It's now protected by 600 members of the Christian militia. And we actually went out there to provide a Christmas for that Christian militia by bringing them food and other supplies, because both the Peshmerga and the Iraqi forces, despite what you hear in the news, despite what our government says, they are attempting to starve the Christian militia out of Karakush.
Oh, gosh, Bill, that's just even hard to comprehend. So you sent me a list. You've delivered real food stuff to them. I think enough food, I think you said, for 20 days. Freezing chicken, rice, food oil, lentil, sugar, things like just the basic necessities. And is this specifically for the Christian militia, and they're the ones protecting the town?
That was all right? For the Christian militia. We delivered 1,000 kilos of rice. That's just over a ton, 2,000 200 pounds of rice. We delivered 500 kilos of cooking oil, groats, which is cereal. There are a few things that aren't on that list I furnished you, including some date syrup and some other things like that. We had a hard time this morning. We had a hard time. The Peshmerga were not going to allow us to take it in. We finally had to get a military truck from the NPU, the Nineveh Protection Unit. Yeah, the Nineveh Protection Unit, the Christian militia. They had to send a truck, and on the Kurdish side of the checkpoint, we had to unload our truck and load it into a military truck to get it through, because the Peshmerga is blocking aid to the Christian side. It is nothing over here is what it seems to be. Nothing over here is the way it is related in the media, and nothing over here is what our politicians think they see. I want to give you an example of this. It's an outrageous example, but I'm going to give you an example. We do, as you know, Christian for Refugees. Last night at the Ashdi 2 camp, we had about 400 children between the ages of 4 and 7 for a Christmas party. We had Santa Claus. We had puppet shows. We had, they had a meal. They had coloring contests, a coloring book. They got a gift to take home. At the beginning of this, we were told that the bishop of Erbil had asked if he could come and visit with a friend from France. So he shows up with his friend from France in order to go to the front of the room to have his picture taken. The friend from France was Congressman Smith, Chris Smith. Chris Smith was identified to the children in the group as a man from France who was interested in their welfare. They took a bunch of pictures for the bishop and for Chris Smith to use. I'm sure that Chris Smith doesn't even know that he was not introduced as Congressman Chris Smith, but as a man from France. They took a bunch of photographs for whatever newspapers they want and left. That is the way politics in the Middle East works, and it's the way we have the way that those of us who are working aid over here have to deal with. Nothing is real. Everything is mirrors, particularly when it pertains to the U.S. government.
So, Bill, the inference there, let me make it clear, is that you guys were providing all of this. You're the ones that put this together for the kids. You're the ones that have raised the money, and it's not easy to raise this money. We'll talk about the process that you've been through to try to make this happen. This is just one location. And so the politicians and the bishop, who's a politician too in his own right, I'm sure, because church becomes politicized when it becomes part of the state, came to take pictures and sort of like take credit for the event. Is that what you're saying?
Well, they took pictures. I don't know whatever they're going to use them for, but they took pictures with the children and left. They were there a total of 5 minutes. I'm just using that as an example of what happens. I'm sure that Chris Smith is in the news today for being in Erbil over there in the United States somewhere, because I sure did see him last night. But this same thing applies to Karakush, where I just was. And the aid that people think that are going there, what they think is happening with the Kurdish militia and the Peshmerga, and between the Peshmerga and the Iraqi army, and none of this is real. I had to go through five different checkpoints this morning. Two of them were Peshmerga checkpoints, two of them were Iraqi army checkpoints, and one of them was the NPU checkpoint. And each one of those, we had different types of problems at, and we had to furnish, again, as I said, our truck to be unloaded and loaded into a different truck because the Peshmerga will not allow us to take aid directly to the NPU.
Okay, Bill, so, let me just make sure I understand. The Peshmerga is the military of the Kurds. That's the
military.
Okay,
that's
and they
correct.
Are Muslim, but and so they are. See, the impression, of course, is that the Kurds are soft or friendly toward the Christians, but not so.
Well, soft politically enough in order to get aid from the United States, but the reality is that they want governance and control over the Nineveh Plain, and the Iraqis want governance and control over the Nineveh Plain. And both of those two entities want to make sure that that no Christian militia or other entity can be there that can claim that they saved the land or took the land or can claim it for any other reason. There are already numerous applications for from the Iraqi side in order to try to get land in order to move to move other individuals in there. It is a devastating scene here. This country has been ravaged by 13 years of war now, 13 years of terrorism, 13 years of Shia mosques being blown up every Friday, 13 years of churches being attacked, 13 years of malls being bombed. It just has ended since 2003. The people are in a desperate state. They're confused, and they just really, more than anything else, need left alone for a while.
Bill, we're going to have to, in a second, there's going to be a break. And before we get to that break, I know you're going to stay with me a little longer, as long as your connection lasts here. But I want to get practical because people are listening now. They may not be listening in a few minutes. How could they help a Religious Freedom Coalition? This is doing Christmas for refugees. Is it too late to help? And what can they do?
No, it's never too late to help because a part of the whole Christmas for Refugee program is ongoing. We have a diaper program as well. We have two separate internet sites people can look at, christmasforrefugees.org and diapersforrefugees.org. And then we have other programs, but by helping the Christmas program and by getting money in there, other programs are helped as well. The problems over here are real. The situation with the Christians is real. And we don't take USAID funds or EU funds because if we did, we wouldn't be able to help 100% Christians, which is what we do.
Yes, and I think, Bill, when this is a longer point that I don't want to get off on a tangent, but I think it's admirable and smart not to take federal funds. I am so opposed to that. I remember when that first came up, at least explicitly under the Bush administration, and I was president of CWA, and I said, no, we don't want Christian organizations getting federal funds, not because it's wrong, but because it corrupts the organizations. And that's exactly what we've seen it do. And so I thank God that you haven't done that, and it shows your integrity. We have to take a break, but my guest is Bill Murray. He is coming to us live from Iraq. He is the chairman of the Religious Freedom Coalition. And when we return, I'm going to talk to Bill about his contacts there and actually what it does take on the ground, who he can trust and who he can't. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Oops, there's a piece I missed a little bit.
Grandpa, why do we always pick up litter when we go hiking?
Well, we're just making it nicer for people who come after us a little bit. It's called stewardship.
My grandfather taught me that you should always leave a place better than you found it. That it's important to invest in the lives of your children and grandchildren, leaving them with a godly legacy they can build on. That's why I decided to set up a charitable gift annuity with the AFA Foundation.
It's called stewardship.
I know that my gift will support a ministry that honors the biblical principles I hold dear, and it's a way to invest in the future of our country. The AFA Foundation also arranged for me to have a steady fixed income, so I don't have to worry in the midst of changing times.
Call the AFA Foundation today to find out how you can set up a charitable gift annuity. Just call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
The Old Testament, it really happened. This is Ken Ham, author, speaker, and blogger on science and the Bible's authority. Did you know that Jesus believed the Old Testament was literal history? He often quoted from it to support what he was saying. For example, when asked about marriage, he quoted from Genesis about the creation of man and woman. He knew it was real history. Now, the Apostle Paul tells us that the history of the Old Testament was written for our instruction, so don't neglect it. Why are we talking about this at Christmas? Well, the Old Testament, beginning in Genesis, provides the foundation for Christ's work. Jesus was the promised Messiah who would come to redeem fallen humanity. This Christmas, take time to look back at the Old Testament and rejoice in seeing how God's redemptive plan was revealed in history.
Sign up for Ken Ham's daily email insights when you go to AnswersRadio.com. You'll be equipped and encouraged to stand on God's Word at AnswersRadio.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next. How would you like to finish your degree online? Truett McConnell University makes that possible with their top-notch online program. You can even earn a master's in theology. For 70 years, Truett McConnell University has been preparing students to fulfill God's high calling on their lives, on campus or online. A degree that can not only change your life, but also your workplace. Truett.edu is the website. That's Truett.edu. Thousands of soldiers and airmen, sailors and Marines will be somewhere other than home on Christmas Day. It can be a difficult time, even for the most battle-hardened warrior. So the folks at FedEx have decided to do something about the sacrifice many of our military members and their families make during the holiday season. Thanks to FedEx volunteers, along with Christmas tree farms from around the country, thousands of military families will celebrate the holiday with a fresh-cut Christmas tree. FedEx Freight is delivering 18,000 Christmas trees to military bases. They also partnered with the USO to send 6,000 care packages to service members stationed in Guam. It's a fine thing that FedEx is doing for our troops. And if you'd like to get involved in the Trees for Troops program next year, well, I've got that information for you at toddstarnes.com. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the Morning. Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. The world has a savior. That is the good news. Bill Murray is coming to us from war-torn Iraq. It's almost unbearable to hear the stories. And meanwhile, especially the contrast with us here in this country, having been the recipient of so many blessings. And even in the midst of, many of us think it was that the election was a blessing, that we have sort of averted something really dark and insidious. I think that's true, that God has heard the prayers of his people. But remember that God sent, he became a man, and he came for the purpose of saving the world, not just America, but the entire world. He's not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. Bill Murray's story, personal story, I always want to touch on it because I know it's old news to him, but you have to know that Bill Murray, who is the chairman of the Religious Freedom Coalition, is the son of the famous atheist Madeline Murray O'Hare, who led the charge in the 60s to outlaw prayer in public schools successfully. And Bill came to Christ when he was a young man, alienated himself from his family, and has gone into full-time work. And that what he's doing in Iraq today is the result of his own passion, his own change in his heart. The Savior of the world came into Bill's heart and changed him. And as a result of that, he's doing everything he can to help Christians in the Middle East. And that's where he is right now joining us. Bill, it's you're 8 hours later, right? So it's like, what is it over there? What time is it?
It's 7 hours, actually. It's about 4, it's after a little after 4 here, 4:20.
Okay. All right, so you were describing to us the complexities. You said you had to go through 5 checkpoints to deliver aid to the Christian militia guarding the city of Karakash, Iraq. That's just one part of what you've been doing. But my question is, you have so much knowledge. Every time we talk, I know you do. You have firsthand knowledge. But who in the world can you trust? How can you you just trust your own eyes and what you're seeing? Or do you have people there or persons on the ground who kind of brief you and help you to understand the complexities?
Well, we have corresponding ministries here in Lebanon and Jordan and in Iraq and in Syria. And those are ministries that we work with. They're ministries and churches that implement our plans for the Christmas for Refugee and the Diaper for Refugee program. So there are a lot of very personal relationships and that are involved and almost constant contact with what's going on. When CIA did Damascus volcano 5 years ago, I was told about it 2 weeks in advance before it happened. So, you know, there is a lot of on the ground knowledge here, and you get to really know people, and they're willing to speak open to you, even though you're an American. You start to learn how people really feel deep down in. There is an overwhelming hatred in this country for Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. And they don't realize this because the people, the politicians, everybody that they deal with over here has a smile on their face and a handshake for them and nothing but wonderful words to say about them because they want money. They want the aid, they want the military aid, they want the jet planes, they want the guns, they want something. And when you begin to talk to them, whether they're military officers or they're Christian service workers or they're Sunnis or they're Shia, they look at the United States government as the entity that sowed the seeds of destruction that has killed nearly 1 million people in this nation in the last 13 years. There isn't a single person that I have ever met that has not had somebody that they knew or that was a relative of those killed since the invasion in 2003. 80% of the people here firmly believe that the United States of America started ISIS in order to do even more damage to their nation. So the views over here and what they are willing to say publicly and in order to deal with the United States, which is, you know, to a degree still an occupier, and in order to deal with us financially, and how they feel of, they love Americans, don't get me wrong, they love American people. It's just our government that they really hate.
Bill, does that hatred extend to George W. Bush for going into Iraq in the first place? And taking down Saddam Hussein.
Yes, I think it does. They look at it as Bush and Obama and Hillary Clinton as just one thing that has just created a constant state of chaos in their nation. They do. Rightly or wrongly, with George Bush, they do. But the thing spiraled out of control with George Bush. Unfortunately, what he thought he could do here, he couldn't do. But, you know, you asked me about smoke and mirrors, and I want to give you just one example going outside of Iraq. In media here, we get to see, you played that segment about Aleppo at the very beginning.
Yes.
Here
with
we see videos of the thousands of people that have gone back to eastern Aleppo after it's taken back over by the government. People that have not been able to get into their homes in eastern Aleppo for the four years that it has been held by Al Nusra. There are markets opening in the street. The buses are running for the first time in years. We give in our media this picture of a devastated city when, in fact, there was 1.2 million people living in a prosperous western Aleppo, and there was about 100 to 150,000 people that were more or less prisoners of Al-Nusra in eastern Aleppo. And the situation is just not as reported. Eastern Aleppo is actually coming back to life after years and years and years and years of radical Islamist oppression. And I know that's not what the American people want to hear, because they have been fed a solid line as if all of Aleppo was democratic and Syrians and the Russians were besieging it, when in reality a small pocket of Aleppo was controlled by these people, and 1.2 million people were living in Aleppo. And anybody can just go online and check my figures on this, or look for the facts, or a great Los Angeles Times story. But it isn't just about Aleppo. It's about the entire Middle East is like that. And our view of it and what we think is happening and what we think Saudi Arabia is and what we think is going on in Iraq isn't really happening. And oftentimes it's a total mirror image of what we believe.
You know, Bill, it's not. That's not hard for informed people to believe now, because we see, for instance, what our news has done in trying to misinform, give disinformation. It's been going on since the 70s, as you and I both know, but I think the American people are finally understanding that it's being lied to. So it's not, shouldn't be a shock that the narrative of the Middle East is a total fabrication as well. Now, let me ask you about Aleppo, because let me see if I can ask you so I can be clear about this. You're saying the Syrian government under Bashar al-Assad is reestablishing itself and people are coming back. That's what you're saying.
Absolutely. Thousands of people have moved back into eastern Aleppo. In fact, the Daily Mail in London made fun of people because tourists have started to come into eastern Aleppo in order to take selfies of themselves in front of the citadel, the ancient citadel, which is thousands of years old. And they said how distasteful that was. Well, it distasteful depends on your view of who the victor was, but no, the city is starting to come back. Also, what was never mentioned in the Western press is that Western Aleppo, with the 1.2 million people, was constantly being hit by artillery rounds and mortar rounds in civilian areas by the rebels that held Western Aleppo, who principally targeted churches and church schools and Shia mosques and marketplaces. There wasn't a single week that went by that artillery and mortar shells did not land in Western Aleppo into civilian areas. And the death and destruction in Western Aleppo from there was totally, completely, and utterly ignored by the Western press in favor of carrying out the narrative. So, you know, it's that is, I'm just using that as an example, and I don't want to go on about Aleppo.
Yeah. Okay,
but
Bill.
We have the same situation here.
Let me ask you, there is an article in Yahoo, of all places, and the title of the article is, "In Germany, Some Muslim Refugees Convert to Christianity." Then it goes on and tells various stories. All right, well, this is not new, you know, but that Muslims are converting to Christianity depends on what you're talking about. But I want to know what you're seeing. Where are you seeing God work? Are you seeing so much devastation? Sometimes it's hard to see God at work, but are you seeing God at work in the Middle East, Bill?
Absolutely, and we are seeing conversions. However, this is very difficult. In the Middle East, you have your religion on your ID card, and you can't change that religion. You can face a real prosecution. In most of these countries, except for Syria, it's against the law if you give birth to a child, even if you're a Christian, to give it any name if that name does not appear in the Quran. So, you know, the persecution is real. The ability to convert isn't real. You cannot change your religion on your ID if you become a Christian. You have all sorts of other difficulties. Despite that, I do know of conversions. There are people that work within the ministry the ministries we work with here, who have given up the ways of Islam, who have accepted Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior. There are many. Unfortunately, because of the laws and situations like that, they have to secretly go to churches. Oftentimes, they don't go to church in their own neighborhood. They will go across town to go to church because they know that if they are seen, the number of problems it can cause to them, because it still says on their ID that they're Muslim. One of the things that needs to be done if a country is going to be fair or secular is to take the religion off the ID. And Iraq's not going to do that because Iraq is a Sharia-compliant nation.
You know, I know right now because I have one of my best friend actually was just in Iraq with her husband. There are Christian ministries. There are people. There are Americans I know living, working there, doing mission work anonymously. I don't know about every city, but I know that they are in Iraq. And so the work is continuing. There are probably missionaries, small parts of the country, I'm guessing, as much as they can get in. Bill, are you in a danger yourself being there right now?
Well, you know, in Kirakush, you can hear artillery fire. But, you know, it is, I mean, this is generally a dangerous place. And, you know, I honor the missionaries. I have met with them. I have talked with them. I talked to a couple just the other night. And as I said, there are real conversions, but a conversion is dangerous everywhere, not necessarily the government. But, you know, you do have the honor killings. You have other situations that arise. Resentments can be against people that are missionaries. This is not something that you can do in the way it can be done in the United States or, let's put it that way.
Let me just say that Religious Freedom Coalition now is in the they have lots of other events. And Bill, I know you haven't been over there very long. You're going to be doing some other dinners for refugees. I remember last year we talked about that, Christmas for refugee dinners. You discussed one just a few minutes ago, but I know you're having several of them. And let me just say that you can go to Religious Freedom Coalition. What's the website address, Bill?
Well, there's the religiousfreedomcoalition.org is our main site. If they want to follow what we're doing here, it's at christmasforrefugees.com. They can either spell it out F-O-R or use the number 4, but it's christmasforrefugees.org, christmasforrefugees.org. And yes, we're having center. We had a 4 to 7 year old dinner last night. Tonight is 8 to 10, and then we're going to have another one, you know, tomorrow, and then we're going to do the hygiene package distribution to all the parents of all these children with about $40 worth of hygiene materials to every one of the families of these children as well while we're here. That's part of the Christmas program.
All right, so christmasforrefugees.org, christmasforrefugees.org. And Bill, also, I know you taped a special with Lauren Green for Fox. So I don't know, do you know when that's going to air? We could tell people that.
No, I haven't gotten an email for Lauren Green yet. It is a Christmas type event story. I hope they don't hold it until Christmas Day.
Right. All right, well, listen, Bill, I so appreciate you taking time. I know it's not easy to get back and get into a place where you can use the phone, and I appreciate that because you have important work to do there, and we just pray for your safety, for your return to your own family. And I pray personally that God will just pour his blessings out on you, Bill, and on your ministry. It's Christians, Christmas for Refugees, christmasforrefugees.org. Bill Murray, Bill, be safe.
And one last thing, Sandy, please ask your people to pray for these children, for the safety of the children and for their future.
Absolutely. Consider it done. Bill Murray, thank you so much. Live from Iraq, and this is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Your American Family Association will never quit.
We will never quit, ever.
We will continue to stand for God's truth as long as we have breath and the religious liberty to do so.
We believe that God might still show mercy to America by sending revival.
So, we will continue to be salt and light in our nation.
Thank you for standing with the American Family Association this year through your prayers, your financial partnership, and your determination to be salt and light where you live. In the days ahead, we ask for your continued involvement so that as battles arise, your American Family Association will be here to fight for your family, fight for America.
Let me tell you something. All God asks of you is faithfulness. That's it.
Today, when you give $35 or more, we'll send you the new book, Our Call to Faithfulness, The Voice and Legacy of Don Wildman. Visit afa.net/faithfulness.
AFA Action Alerts. When you subscribe, we'll notify you once or twice a week about a critical issue facing our country. AFA Action Alerts have been very successful in influencing legislation, as well as getting positive results from America's Fortune 500 companies. Subscribe to your AFA Action Alerts today. Together, we are making a difference. Go to afa.net and click on the Resources tab.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
You know, there is so much uncertainty about what to do and how to do it when it comes to this incredible responsibility to be a good steward of what God's entrusted us with. Whether it's a lot or a little, it's irrelevant. But it's a very scary prospect today in this day of volatility.
Financial Issues with Dan Celia every weekday morning from 8 until 10 Central and Saturday from 10 to 11 on AFR Talk.
Merry Christmas from 8 Days of Hope. We want to thank you, the American Family Radio listener, for supporting 8 Days of Hope as we serve disaster victims in 2016. Volunteers from across the country that heard about 8 Days of Hope on AFR came to Texas and Louisiana and South Carolina and West Virginia to help out flood victims. You came to Mississippi to help out flood victims and tornado victims. And then in October, we happened to be in South Carolina where Hurricane Matthew hit. And we had thousands of people there that were willing to help and serve and love others who needed our assistance. Thank you for your volunteering. Thank you for your financial support. But most of all, thank you for your prayers for 8 Days of Hope. Please continue to pray for 8 Days of Hope as we move to 2017. We hope that you and your family have a Merry Christmas and a joyous New Year.
That's Steve Tiber of 8 Days of Hope, a ministry partner of the American Family Association. You can learn more at 8daysofhope.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Yesterday, China returned an unmanned underwater mapping vehicle it had stolen last week with impunity and without cost from the United States Navy. Presumably, in the intervening time, it has fully compromised whatever technology and data the drone contained. The associated humiliation of our country may prove to be the greater cost of this incident, however. It fits a pattern of such diminishing of our country at the hands of America's actual or potential enemies, likely to be among the most damning legacies of the Obama presidency. To name a few examples, the consequence-free hacking of our government, businesses, and electoral campaigns by hostile powers, the PRC's seizure and arming of islands dominating the South China Sea, the appalling Obama bomb nuclear deal with Iran accompanied by its hostage-taking of American civilians and sailors. Some legacy. Enemies emboldened, friends undermined, our country diminished. This is Frank Gaffney.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the morning.
Multiple federal statutes do not allow you to give death threats to electors. But understand, this is a larger effort to destabilize the system, destabilize the Electoral College. There are people out there that spend millions of dollars trying to destabilize the Electoral College, And these threats are a part of it because it tries to alter the outcome of the election. That's how this Justice Department plays. If you are against them, they don't help you. There are federal statutes exactly on point, Steve.
Yeah.
You cannot send threats by interstate communications to kill people, especially if they're electors. It's a federal crime. The FBI hasn't even called the electors to ask them what happened. Imagine if Hillary had won this election and all of these alleged white supremacists in the alt-right were threatening the electors for Hillary. We all know exactly what would happen and what should happen,
right?
Because the system has to be preserved. You must have a system where people can vote according to the rule of law, not according to the chaos that the left wants to impose on America. Remember Ferguson? Remember what happened after that police officer used legitimate deadly force? You had the president, the attorney general, all of them grandstanding about a lie. And now you have real threats to the system, the constitutional order, by threats toward electors, and they're deadly silent. It shows you what these people are all about, and good riddance to them on January 20th.
Well, that's the voice of J. Christian Adams, who you've heard many times on this show. And just to put this in perspective, Christian is an election attorney who served in the voting rights section at the U.S. Department of Justice. His New York Times bestselling book is Injustice, Exposing the Racial Agenda of the Obama Justice Department. And we could go on and on because he writes a lot of stuff and he does a lot of things to help the country. In fact, at his own, not benefit. Trying to find the words. Christian, thanks for joining me this morning and also for being flexible with Bill Murray's live interview from Iraq. We appreciate you delaying a little bit here. Thank you.
No worries. Merry Christmas, Sandy.
Merry Christmas right back to you. Well, yesterday the electors did elect Donald Trump, 304 votes to Donald Trump, 227 to Hillary. Ironically, Trump lost two votes from faithless electors and Hillary lost four. But more to the point, there was an attempt to undermine the American system. And in that interview you did on Fox yesterday, Christian, you point out that the FBI hasn't even investigated the threats to the electors. That makes no sense.
Well, that's what really shows how radically politicized the Justice Department has become. The Fox producers contacted these electors who got threats, and no FBI agents have contacted them. No U.S. Attorney's Office has done any interviews with these electors. They've simply done nothing. And anybody who knows law enforcement knows that you want to collect evidence closest to the scene of the crime. You don't wait weeks and months to do it. If you want to catch the people who are threatening to kill these presidential electors, you need to do it now, and they just haven't done it.
Christian, now that begs the question. You know, Comey is allegedly... Oh, let's make it generic. The FBI director is allegedly independent, even though he's appointed by the executive. He's independent. That means that Comey is not ordering any investigations of this.
Well, that's correct. There's James Comey back in the news, I suppose. But, you know, good people work in the FBI. I mean, there is nothing stopping an agent and supervisors up the chain from initiating this. And it just shows that they know what the prevailing winds are inside the Obama administration. And the prevailing winds was to unleash chaos about the Electoral College. This was very deliberate, folks. This wasn't some accidental thing with people marching around state capitals in the last week. This is an effort to undermine the constitutional order. They hate the Electoral College. They want Los Angeles and large cities to elect the president, not a cross-section of America. And so even these faithless electors, that's why there were more Hillary faithless electors, because they want to demonstrate symbolically how they think the Electoral College is stupid. That's why they vote for, like, Eagle Feather Peace Hill or whatever her name was in Washington. And they're trying to undermine the credibility of the constitutional Electoral College.
Bottom line, though, Christian, you alluded to this in your interview. When Jeff Sessions, and we're going to get to Jeff Sessions in a second, Senator Jeff Sessions is the nominee for Attorney General. He can do something about this when he's sworn in, can he not?
Well, absolutely. There's no statute of limitations that is going to expire anytime soon. So a crime is a crime is a crime. And as I said on Fox, for all you U.S. attorneys out there that need help, it's 18 U.S.C. 875C. You can go look it up in your law books.
You cannot call people on the telephone in interstate communications and threaten to kill people. That's just against federal law. And I'm sure there's people in prison right now who have been making interstate death threats. Mm-hmm. And you can't do that, particularly when it undermines the whole constitutional system. Look, they know now they can get away with it, Sandy. This isn't about 2016 anymore. It's about 2020 and 2024. Once you unleash chaos, as anybody who studies history knows, chaos flourishes, chaos grows, and you have to stop chaos when it starts.
And speaking of that, I saw this article, and of course I thought of you, because we talked at great, because you were with the U.S. Justice Department Civil Rights Commission, you know all the players, and you were the first person that I know of, Christian, who wrote right after 2012, all of the appointments to the Justice Department, they were just a nightmare. Over 100 easily leftists. And one of them was a name I remember, Dago Agdagbili. I had to practice to pronounce that to interview you. And now Dago Agdagbili, along with Catherine Layman, has been appointed by President Obama here in his last breathing moments to 6-year terms on the U.S. Civil Rights Commission. What does that mean?
Well, it means that this president is going to leave office the same way he came in, as a complete radical. And Dago Agdagbili is a radical left-wing civil rights lawyer with the NAACP who went out of his way to represent Mumia Abu-Jamal, the unrepentant cop killer who's become a celebrity on places like NPR and Pacifica for killing police officer Danny Faulkner in Philadelphia. And Dago Agdagbili not only represented him, but raised money off of him for his organization, undermined the entire criminal justice system in his arguments. And Obama appointed him to lead the Civil Rights Division of Justice, and his nomination failed. Even Democrats wouldn't support him. That's why he failed. That's how radical he was. And so what Obama does at the end of the term, at the end of the administration, is to give this guy a plum post on the Civil Rights Commission. There's no Senate confirmation. And he's going to be there to create trouble for the equal justice under law for the next 6 years.
And there's nothing that can be done about that, is there?
Well, the only thing that could be done is the Republicans could defund the Civil Rights Commission, but I'm not holding my breath.
Yeah, I'm not either. All right, I want us to get to this. I think this is the beginning of other conversations about the hearing on Attorney General appointee Jeff Sessions. There's going to be trouble. I haven't actually talked about it as much as I want to, Christian. So let's just say right now this will be probably the first fight in the new Senate. And so you wrote a really interesting article called Why They Really Oppose Jeff Sessions as Attorney General. Explain who they are and why they really object to him.
Well, who they are, and we can talk more about who they are and how much money they make off of this, but the institutional left, the civil rights groups, oppose Jeff Sessions because he will fight voter fraud. They opposed Jeff Sessions in 1986 because Jeff Sessions fought voter fraud. It's exactly the same story we're going to hear play out again as we did 30 years ago. Their opposition to Jeff Sessions was because Sessions was willing to do the right thing and prosecute voter fraud in Alabama in the 1980s, blatant, brazen vote stealing with absentee ballots, racially tinged vote stealing where they preyed off of the less sophisticated, and Sessions was willing to go to court and prosecute them. Now, a jury acquitted them, but anybody who knows the facts of that case knows that there was crimes taking place. And so that's why the institutional left, particularly lawyers in the Civil Rights Division at the Justice Department, who went and testified against Jeff Sessions, opposed him in 86, and that's why they oppose him now, because they don't want laws enforced like the federal laws regarding voter fraud, and alien voting, non-citizen voting, voter roll cleanup. They don't want these laws enforced because they like the system the way it is, with failures, with holes, with weakness, weak points. And they want to preserve those weak points so they can win future elections.
All right, I'm going to borrow a paragraph from your article, because you write, the civil rights industry has become lucrative. In 1961, Freedom Rider volunteers boarded buses to oppose the constitutionally and morally offensive system of racial segregation. Today, Nancy Zirkin, and her allies seek to undo their noble work by dividing Americans based on skin color for $250,000 a year. All right, talk about what this is the leadership conference, and Nancy Zirkin is the chief opponent to Sessions right now, kind of leading the charge. Explain what how they are really floating in large amounts of cash as a result of their hard work.
That's a great point. These people exist to divide America. 50 years ago, they held the moral high ground. Now they're in the gutter. Nancy Zirkin, Leadership Conference on Civil Rights. Sounds very fancy, doesn't it? But
yes.
It's a group that racially divides America. And here's the gig, folks. These people, Wade Henderson runs it. He makes, get this, $360,000 a year. $360,000 a year to do things like oppose Jeff Sessions. They make an average, the people there, these people I mentioned in the article, $222,000 a year to stir up racial division in this country and to claim that the system is rigged against minorities and Jeff Sessions is a bad guy. I mean, look, it's a good gig now. The people used to ride buses to the South for nothing and risk their lives. As I said, the soldiers who died in Selma and on the dunes of Fort Wagner, fighting for equality without regard to skin color, like Martin Luther King and Frederick Douglass did, that's all so old-fashioned. That's so 1965. These guys are in it for the cash, and they're in it to divide.
All right, before I forget it, we're going to put this on our Facebook page so you can share it. It's why they really oppose Jeff Sessions as Attorney General. There are a lot more details in that article. But the other point I think, Christian, to make is that some are saying that this fight against Jeff Sessions is really a non-fight because he is well-known in the Senate. He has a long record. He's a gentleman. He's done great things. The things that they're accusing him of are very fragile, and most of his accusers are not credible. So he will not be stopped, but many are saying that this is a kind of a warm-up session for the first Supreme Court nominee by President-elect Donald Trump. What do you think?
That's exactly right. The people who oppose Jeff Sessions are in it for the long game, Sandy. You can't ever forget that. And just because we're going to win the fight over Jeff Sessions, what they're really looking at is, number one, hobbling him as Attorney General. They want policy compromises out of him, make his staff afraid to do certain things. And so if they cause pain in the confirmation, they can affect the policy in the future. The second thing is the Supreme Court fight. Right after Jeff Sessions, we're going to have a fight for probably the most pro-life, pro-constitutional nominee we've seen in a very long time. And they will go to war to taint, to smear, to undermine, to attack whoever that nominee is. And this is the warm-up fight. So, folks, you got to get activated on this because the fight over Jeff Sessions is the prelude to the fight of something just as big, if not bigger.
Well, we'll be covering that often and loudly because he's a stalwart. He's such a friend. He's a friend because of his positions. He's not just a friend because he's a friend. That's not the point. But Jeff Sessions is a courageous fighter for what's right. He has been for decades in the Senate, and we will be fighting for him too. And Christian Adams is cut from the same cloth. And so, Christian, we appreciate all your good writing and your wisdom that you bring to the discussion on a daily basis on Fox and certainly on our show as often as we can. So, Christian, Merry Christmas to you and your family, and I hope you enjoyed the holiday, get refreshed, and come back to the battlefield come January.
Merry Christmas, Sandy, and everybody out there.
All right. Thank you so much. All right. Well, Sandy Rios saying goodbye just for today on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.